Good evening. Welcome to the Celerity Report. Today is April 10th, 2014. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Upcoming events, we have Lunch with Catherine in Palm Springs. That's going to be joint with Going Organics magazine. It's going to be a wonderful weekend brunch. I hope you can join us. You can learn more about it on the blog after you log in. June 28th, 29th, the Secret Space Program and Breakaway Civilization. I'll be joined by Dr. Joseph Farrell, Richard Dolan, and hopefully John Rappaport will be with us as well. That's going to be in San Mateo, June 28th and 29th. They have their blog, their website up at secretspaceprogram.org, and I would really check it out. It's going to be a very special event. Our theme tonight is from a wonderful book, one of my favorite books of essays by Michael Ventura, written in 1985, called Shadow Dancing in the USA. Profoundly prophetic, profoundly wonderful, wonderful group of essays. The theme is, we all live in the South Bronx now. Let me just read you the quote that it comes from. We all live in the South Bronx because that neighborhood is the unavoidable proof that American civilization can stop. It can stop literally right around the corner, and if it does, nobody can do a thing about it. Americans know this and are obsessed with it. Almost every new movement, and certainly every public institution, is focused on not becoming the South Bronx. We live in the first phase of American history, not obsessed with progress, but with survival. Very prophetic. I wanted to use that because when Ventura wrote, he was talking about the kind of tactics that get used on poor neighborhoods, the South Bronx being an example of that. Those tactics have also been used on dissidents, but now we see them moving to everyone. Part of it is the technology has become so invasive, and it's that invasive technology gives all sorts of people the power to use that information, including for economic warfare. It's part of what is now referred to as soft weapons, and in fact, I've asked Charles Hugh Smith to join us next week. We'll be going to be talking about soft weapons, inspired by a wonderful blog post he did about the Ukraine sanctions. We see reports this week of money pouring into universities, primarily from business and defense contractors for cybersecurity curriculums. The shift of warfare onto the cyber platform continues. Two very good examples are stories that I've had up on the blog about Yelp. One from the Wall Street Journal about small businesses suing Yelp, Yelp being a San Francisco website that promotes reviews and helps people find local small business. Also, now a story today about Yahoo's partnership with Yelp and how reviews, good reviews of small businesses are disappearing. In both instances, we see Yelp doing things that harm small business. I certainly have plenty of anecdotal stories told to me about Yelp trying to market advertising services to small business. If they don't buy, suddenly they see bad reviews coming up. That's what the lawsuit described in the Wall Street Journal is about. The question is how somebody can operate like this with these kinds of dirty tricks without some kind of protection. And I think, again, my guess is they do have some kind of protection. You see essentially a movement into neighborhoods. Our old competition between corporations with publicly traded stock who can do get a big multiple on that income, and they're moving in on small business. And this is part, I suspect, of the soft weapons being used against small business. We've seen for years manipulation, for example, of the stats on Google. I used to always laugh when I put up my first video, and the stats would go up, and then suddenly, boom, the next day they would be lower than they were before. So the views would go up, boom, then they would come down, they'd go up, boom, then they'd come down. When the Thrive guys let Thrive go public, I said, you know, same thing's going to happen. And sure enough, the views would go up, and boom, suddenly they'd be set down. And you realize there are big, big games going on. So we'll talk about that more with Charles Hugh Smith, but increasingly I know we all feel this. You know, we feel that in a way we all live in the South Bronx now, so there it is. Money and markets, this is tax times, and of course many corporations have earnings report. That means high tensions for all concerned. We know what happened last year on April 15th. Let's hope it doesn't happen again. Reports from the IRS of identity theft, filers grabbing your identity and filing returns to get your tax return or your tax refund. I put the article up on the blog. Very frustrating thing to happen to you at tax time, so beware. There were a number of articles over the last week about doctors who generate significant revenues through Medicare. Beware of these stories and beware of this effort. Medicare is no gravy train. A lot of what you're watching is forcing doctors out of private practice into large corporate institutions where they're much more easily controlled. Or they just continue to practice, but they do cash practice. They get off Medicare entirely. Some get off Medicare, some get off insurance company payments. The more these kinds of stories are promoted and people believe them, the harder and harder it's going to make Medicare beneficiaries, Medicare beneficiaries, to get the kind of help they need, except from those who are under very high central control. It's kind of the equivalent of what Yelp is doing to small business, doing to the small independent physicians. Don't fall for it. I'm not saying we can necessarily stop everything that's happening, but the last thing you want to do is buy into it. The Wall Street Journal, the big headline in the Wall Street Journal was about a doctor who billed $21 million to Medicare. I assure you, for a big practice, could have had multiple doctors in it. I didn't read the story carefully. $21 million of revenues is far from $21 million of profits. In fact, you can even have losses with that. So, you know, if you get a chance to talk to an editor of the Wall Street Journal, please ask them to write about where the $4 trillion is that's missing from the U.S. government instead of front page headlines on a doctor who's billed $29 million gross revenues for Medicare. The material omission of saying where the $4 trillion is and how to get it back is profound. A comment from the subscriber on the Heartbleed virus. The commentary is up on the blog about the Heartbleed virus. They read, just as you predicted, things that soak up our time. I said in the annual wrap-up for the last 2 years, please make sure to reserve time for all these kinds of things that are going to waste your time and eat you alive. It's not surprising to me to see a virus that bad impact the service, the servers at this time of year. But it's a reminder of the instability of the internet and the kind of systems we're now relying on. I blew up last week and I said, you know, why is it that American engineers can make a system that can invade the privacy of everybody and everything as they do everything, but they can't make a telephone that works? Quite remarkable. The question, of course, in the Heartbleed virus is who created it and why, and I hope that will emerge over time. But as we go through this period, these things are going to happen so fast and furious, we're not going to have time to figure them all out. The squabble in the Ukraine continues with the Secretary of Defense now meeting with the Chinese. Big danger of the Russians and China trying to drawing closer together, big energy deals in the works between the Russians and Chinese, and of course increased trade now. If you look at the historic hatred between the Russian and the Chinese, them drawing closer together is easier said than done. One of the big issues between the United States and China, of course, is China's effort to assert jurisdiction over portions of the China Sea. There's no way the United States can tolerate that. Too much of it's amazing the percentage of the world trade that flows through that area by ship. And of course, the naval supremacy is, of course, the historical military card of the United States and the person who governs the reserve currency. So expect that to be sensitive, and it's not surprising we see the reallocation of aircraft carriers back out to Asia. If China and Russia continue to draw together, that will make the importance of space weapons continue to grow. So it's not surprising, as I said last week, that NASA is pulling back from cooperation with Russia. I suspect the race for controlling space weaponry is on, and this is only going to turn it into something much fiercer. Sure enough, as I predicted, as Chris Christie is politically sidelined and castigated as a result of a traffic scandal and related criminal investigation, sure enough, we see blossoming of media regarding Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton. You heard it here first. I spoke about what was behind the Supreme Court decision last week, but I want to repeat some of my comments because I think it's so important to your understanding of what's happening. The financial coup d'etat is over. 40-plus trillion has been shifted. Now we see a large number of large corporations who are being asked to execute. And as they look across the landscape, they are finding the operational environment unacceptable. Part of it is the gridlock and sort of chaotic process of Washington. You have too many parties, too many agencies, too many people playing enforcement. The complexity is mind-boggling. The elections are too cumbersome. The failure to get gun control is also very cumbersome. So, and the fear of the Democrats over the elections saying no to all the trade agreements completely bollocks up many of their plans. Government is not operating well in this environment. Disney, you know, this is an example. Disneyland has always been better at manipulating on an economic basis than the Department of Justice and the enforcement bureaucracies. And so you see the corporations looking at what's going on and saying, wait a minute, there are too many messes. This is not the ideal operating environment, and looking to sort of assert adult supervision. And this is all part of the shift from sovereign governments to a world run by corporations. The corporations now have the upper hand in terms of technology, assets, human capital, and you have private investors who are now looking to engineer the next phase of sort of a high-tech world. And they're looking to pull back greater authority into private investors in the corporate state. Not to say that it hasn't been there, but the metastructure is increasingly frustrated with the government bureaucracies that they've now sort of sucked the assets out of and stuck the liabilities into. The corporations have reason to be afraid. If you look at the sort of battle that's going on right now between G7 and the rest of G20, whether in the Ukraine or around the world, there is an increased need to ensure very smooth collaboration and cooperation between the G7 and the central banks, and they cannot afford to be laughed at or looked laughable. And when that starts to happen, it's dangerous. So that has profound implications for getting what they need in the 2014 and 2016 elections, and I think that's part of what you're seeing with the sidelining of Christie, the Supreme Court decision, and now the sort of blossoming of the Bush and Clinton for 2016 nominees, and clearly Bush for president. It's important to understand if this intuition of mine is correct, that central authority enforced by corporations looks and feels very, very different than central authority enforced by governments. And in one respect, they're going to take much more of a Disney World approach in some respects than government. At the same time, they're much firmer than government. This is going to look like a tsunami. So get out your surfboard and your navigation tools. You do not want to have a fight with this kind of tsunami. At the top are people who are arranging to build a very new high-tech society, go into space in a big way, and keep the dollar and euro working well enough to fund retirement checks and mean-tested subsidies as those are sort of ramped down in the slow burn. And that's keeping hundreds of millions of people in the developed world eating. And so in this kind of environment, what you want to do is focus on reducing your individual household and community red button problem. You want to get to a more sustainable level. What you don't want to do is pick a fight with them in a direct and bold way, because when they move, they're going to move like a hot knife through butter. So Chris Hedges had a wonderful video up. I put it up on the blog, a speech he gave in Mark about rebellion. And when you listen to it, I really enjoy it because he's so clear about how outrageous many of the things are going on are. But you understand, if you think back to Gandhi, about the power of not cooperation, you know, refusing to give attention, refusing to give admiration, where we put our transactions, associations, all the things you've heard me talk about in the red button problem and the Solari model response to it. And so we need to individually shift and be part of solutions. And there's a great deal we can accomplish through non-cooperation. But I assure you, if I'm right about the tsunami that's going to roll out, having, you know, using a direct assault, just like the, you know, the militia during the Revolutionary War shot from behind the trees. We need to shoot from behind the trees and not go out on the field and take them on directly. In many respects, Jeb Bush is the perfect frontman for a newly refreshed syndicate of the breakaway civilization of corporate leaders and private investors. But how exactly they were going to present him was something I've been very curious about. And it started last week with an article in the New York Magazine called The Good Bush, where at the same time that we had the, as I said last week, the W come out with the oil paintings and his showing of his paintings of world leaders. So he's kind of soft and cuddly now. They have a New York Magazine had an article sort of doing a trial balloon of the spin that it was the George H.W. Bush was the good Bush and he was really this great patrician and things really worked well. And the funniest thing, if you ever want to read all the comments, because of course the people reading were having none of it and everybody started posting all the great sources to read the real deal on George H.W. Bush. It was pretty funny. Part of this picture of building a sort of more Disney World kind of breakaway civilization reengineering of North America is promoting women. I'm doing a series on the blog, started last week with promoting women part one, this week promoting women part two. I'm going to keep it up. It's going to take probably about six commentaries. There you have it. But as I said, we just in time for the recall, we have a new head of General Motors that's a woman. The new mayor of Paris is a woman. Of course, the woman running the IMF is a woman. And I think is currently scheduled. Clinton will get plenty of airtime as Democratic nominee or likely Democratic nominee as part of this promoting women. At the same time, her profile is nowhere near as good as Jeb Bush's for the 2016 race. And the reality is that the Bushes pay to get Bushes elected, not their allies. So anyway, so be prepared to see a lot more warm and fuzzy faces of women making the whole thing look cooperative and decent. Let's turn to the markets. The first quarter, as I said, was a sideways market. This week, stocks and bonds, you know, in one sense, it was sideways, but all the strong sectors of the stock market are clearly down so far this week and not looking good at all. We are way, way long overdue, years overdue for a 10 to 15% correction. So, and we're also obviously coming in into the period of the year, the summer, when things are slower. So I see, there's no way to tell what's going to happen, but again, we're long overdue for a 10 to 15% correction. It's healthy if we get one. Big question, of course, is the last 2 weeks we've seen the emerging market equities pick up. They're a little bit perky. So the question is it time for the trend to turn? We've seen this enormous divergence between the developed world equities and emerging equities. I think the current G7, G20 war does not augur well for the trend chain whatsoever. A good report from Business Intelligence, Business Insider, venture capital funding is nowhere near the levels we saw during the dot-com bubble. It's absolutely not near if you look at the numbers. A lot of money going into venture capital is rising, but certainly not enough to suggest a tech bubble. If you look at where the money's going, the reports I get is it's much more responsible than we saw in 2000. Finally, gold's looking better this week, and the interview with Franklin will talk more about it. There are plenty of signs of hunger for physical that the hunger remains strong. I was driving through Memphis again this week, and sure enough, more signs of teenagers standing out in the road saying, "We buy gold," and pointing you to the local pawn shop. Some of the smart buyers are now picking up good price stuff in the pawn shops, but the pawn shops are definitely trying to suck up as much gold as they possibly can. An interesting story in the blog about underwater drones that have successfully found 16th century Portuguese vessel, which is expected to have a very significant hold of gold on it. And it's a very interesting story, but it reminds you, with drone technology now, it may be easier to get gold from buried treasure than for mining. Very interesting. Check it out. Finally, one other thing I really want you to check out on the blog. I normally don't cover much about social media, but there were several links on Facebook and Google's effort and sort of planning and thinking about getting literally all 8 billion people on planet Earth onto the internet and onto smartphones. And it's worth watching some of it because it helps you to start imagine a world where we literally have everybody on the planet connected online and capable of communicating with each other and sharing information, including cyber warfare. It reminds me again of Michael Ventura, who said, was describing the process of everybody sort of getting hooked up and linked in the 80s. He said, "We're standing in the psychic storm of our own being." So you can imagine what the psychic storm of our own being with 8 billion people is going to be like. It'll be very interesting, but take a look. It'll be a reminder, I think, of why it is so important for the leadership to get to digital currency. Many of these markets require razor-thin transaction costs. They can't afford the transaction costs that the developed world has been paying. So if you're going to get this to work, you need digital currencies. And, of course, what they want is something like Bitcoin that can produce a complete digital history, ensures amazing centralized control when you do something that, in many respects, is going to throw things out of control, 8 billion people all communicating with each other. Our hero this evening is an Italian senator whose name is Domenico Schillipotti, and his claim to fame in my book is on March 27th. He, having done several things in the legislature already on chemtrails, he moved to abolish the state secret on chemtrails, illuminating, among other things, that in 2003 that one of the former Italian ministers had authorized the United States Air Force to fly over Italian airspace. And talking about the sort of the toxic the dispersion of heavy metals in chemtrails and the extent to which it caused pollution and damage to agriculture. Now, every time you get a G7 senator talking about this in a formal place on the record, I think it really helps the conversation tremendously, and it takes enormous courage to do it. And it wouldn't surprise me if the frustration in the financial workouts that have been ongoing, including in Italy, and all the politics of what's been happening with the Vatican has gotten more than a few people to the point where they're really to go hard at the what I call the real deal. Ask Catherine, we have several questions. One very interesting question we responded to in the Precious Metals Market Report. I had Franklin address it. We've been going around on email about this. We had a subscriber report that their bank had sent them a letter prohibiting them to store money in 90% silver, which is legal tender, in their safe deposit box, considering it money laundering. So the question was that they didn't want to keep it at home, for very good reasons. And the question is, where could they get a depository? Franklin described two depositories he trusts on the East Coast, one in Connecticut, one in Delaware. If any subscribers want recommendations in other areas, we're happy to do some digging. If you want to know more about some of the issues related to depositories, listen to that interview, as well as we have a special report you can link to it from the Resource Center on options for storing precious metals. And back in the Precious Metals Archive Library, we have interviews with Franklin on how to store things safely for those of you who want to consider storing at home. Clearly, the subscriber in question needs to find another bank. At the bank intimate page at Solari, we describe the process of finding a new bank. I'm a person who's blessed with the world's greatest bank. I love my bank. And what I will tell you is, if you can find a great local bank with wonderful people who you trust, it makes an enormous difference to your life, particularly if you have a small business. I can't tell you how wonderful it is to be able to turn to all the people helping me and say, you know, do this, do that, and turn them loose on the bank and the bank on them. So check, if you don't have a bank or a credit union that you really love, check out the Bank Intimate page at Solari. One response from a subscriber: thanks for being so grounded. There are astronomical amounts of disinformation out there coming from every angle. It is refreshing to go back through your past reports to find that your predictions are stable and consistent throughout. Well, gee, thank you for saying that. We try very hard to stick with reality. And given the uncertainty, it's not always easy to do. So I'm glad to see that if you're going back through the archives, it feels and sounds that way. Another comment, question from a subscriber: you likely have seen this already, but just in case it was overlooked, have you seen, quote, "Want Your Mind Blown" on YouTube, question mark? Mr. Global made $40 billion on put options for 9/11, and Rothschild controls $400 trillion, half the world's assets, per the documentary. Please don't believe this stuff. First of all, let's just take 9/11, because we have a number of commentators been on the sort of internet talking about the airline put options during 9/11. Whatever happened with the airline trading and trading in the airline stocks or the related puts on 9/11 was absolutely small potatoes compared to the real insider trading. The real action was in the currency and long bond market, probably including derivatives, and the relaxation on monetary policy. And there were many other things. I had an article I wrote at one point called Cui Bono 9/11, and I go through the top 20 ways people made money on it. But I assure you, the whatever happened on the airline stocks and related put options was small potato. I've heard the presentations on this stuff that have come out recently. I think they're modified hangouts. I think they're a distraction. They take you away from the deeper game. The notion that half the assets are controlled by the Rothschild family, just don't believe it. If there is a trust managing this planet, so I'm not saying the possibility of one centralized authority controlling a major portion of the assets, is that theoretically possible? Yes, it's theoretically possible, but I assure you it's not controlled by one family completely through inheritance. It would happen in a fact pattern where essentially the moon is a Death Star, and the people who control the Death Star, whatever the UFOs are flying around the planet, have the ability to harvest the financial system in a way that is very centralizing. So, this is a planet where the financial system is ultimately run by force, which is why the most important question we can ask or answer is, who controls the space around us, and what are the space weapons in that space, and how do they control? If you can answer that question, you can start to understand our governance system. I've spent my whole life trying to understand the governance system on planet Earth. I don't. That's why we're coming together and gathering in this secret space conference in June. It's really, to go at the very heart of what is the governance system and why are the people leading behaving the way they're behaving. The answer is we do not know. It's very easy for, we all want certainty, and it's very easy to buy into these kinds of oversimplified things. I call them adult fairy tales. They give you certainty and they mislead you, into places that really doesn't capture, the reality of what's happening. Let's go to the movies. In Let's Go to the Movies, I want to talk about a wonderful documentary, Second Opinion. We put the trailer up on the blog. I think the publication of this documentary and the quality of it has profound implications for the credibility of cancer research and treatment. It blows a hole completely in the credibility of the sort of the cancer industry. It's produced by Eric Mercola, and it tells the story, lots of interviews with Ralph Moss, who's a very respected science writer now, but as a young science writer was fired by Sloan Kettering after he outed their suppression of the Laetrile research in the 1970s. There are interviews with his family. He's a very courageous man and supported by a equally courageous family. And it's a marvelous part of the story to see the process they went through together as a family, deciding whether he should do something, what he should do, and the moral struggle that he went through of his obligation to support his family and make sure his family was taken care of and safe versus doing the right thing. And when you see the degrees that Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York went to suppress legitimate research that showed that Laetrile was effective in managing and helping to cure cancer, when you see this kind of suppression, you realize, you know, if that was going on in the 70s, you can imagine how bad it is. And it's a wonderful documentary to show people who are skeptics who can't believe that cancer treatments could be this far away from the reality of what can work very economically and sort of what causes cancer, what can help prevent it, what can heal it. And, you know, it's just very hard for people to realize that things have gotten as loony as they have. But you watch this wonderful documentary and you realize, oh, you know, this is a... My favorite, of course, is the documentary on Royal Rife. We've used that in Let's Go to the Movies before. If you haven't seen it, I strongly recommend it. It's up on the blog and all available, the full documentary for free. Our interview with Franklin Sanders. We had a great interview. It's posted up on the blog. Franklin outdid himself and came up with some great charts. Take a look. And when we do the video, you will be able to hear the audio as the charts are presented. Franklin and I continue to approach the market differently. We both think the primary trend will reassert. Franklin feels that it's likely the current trend up is going to be part of a pattern where it turns out we have found the bottom last December. I think the chances of us retesting and finding a new bottom this summer are good. So I'm a little less optimistic about what it's, you know, when and how we're going to reassert the primary trend. And that's important for many people who are looking to buy. Should they buy now or wait, see if we find a new bottom, or on your investment as opposed to core positions, should you downsize and take this rally as a chance to sell some if you don't want to go through a new dip down with more investment positions? Again, take a look at my blog post on what percentage of your assets should you hold in precious metals. I published it last November, and we talked about it in the January precious metals report. If you want to read two really good pieces that give you the pros and cons of have we found a bottom and should I be buying now? One, I posted up on the blog a great post on arguing the case that we're in for another leg down from the Rambus Chartology website. And then I posted in related reading a new post from Chris Martinson making the case for gold. So that gives you sort of the pros and cons of what to do and where we are now. Franklin believes equities are headed way down. He really sees a major fall, 50% plus in the Dow. I think equities are way overdue for a significant correction, but there's no sign of anything like the drop Franklin is anticipating. Now, the all bets are off scenario is war. And as I've said many times, our big risk now is not global financial collapse. Our big risk is war. The tensions are getting much stronger, and of course there's always a danger we go from slow burn to serious, instead of covert war, to real outbursts of war. And I think that's why these issues of what the sort of the tension between the G7 and the G20 are so bad. And there's no doubt about it that the kind of automation we're watching in the developed world, which can happen in the emerging markets as well, is causing enormous tension, as are the environmental pressures we have. More people and more pressure on resources and, you know, unfolding environmental challenges. So our risk is war, but listen to the interview. It's a very good frame of the arguments, both that the primary trend will reassert and the sort of arguments about is it now or is it later. So check out the interview with Franklin Sanders at the Precious Metals Market Report. And again, as I said, back in the library, we have posts, audio seminars, and Solari reports we did about how to store your precious metals. Some good ideas for those of you who want to store it at home. In closing, next week I'm going to be interviewing Charles Hugh Smith. We're going to be talking about soft weapons. I really feel there was a very little understanding, I felt, in the sort of, you know, our subscriber base on the kind of things the Americans were up to in the Ukraine and what the soft revolutions and soft weapons were. Then I've also gotten a lot of questions over the last 3 months on mind control, and so I asked John Rappaport to join me for a discussion for his quarterly report on more on mind control. I did a briefing on mind control called Mind Control 101 that's back in the archive. If you haven't listened to that, I encourage you to listen to that. This is really a sequel. So John Rappaport, more on mind control on April 24th. And then on May 1st, I'm really looking forward to this. Dr. Joseph Farrell joins me. We're going to be talking about his book, Financial Vipers of Venice, and the key issues at the heart of the financial system. And when we talk about real solutions to the problems before us and the evolution of the financial system, I think it's very good background for those issues that are really discussed. You know, this is sort of some pretty deep stuff. And of course, nobody is more interesting talking about it than Joseph. So until April 17th with Charles Hugh Smith and a discussion of soft weapons, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.